baby, baby. How was I supposed to know that something wasn't right here? Oh, baby, baby. I shouldn't have let you go. And now you're listening to the latest episode of Columbia House Party. I had no idea how to do that introduction. Everyone has the exact tone and sound of that line in their head embedded already. There's no way to do that. That wasn't weird.
I mean, yeah. I think it's rare that we have like the first track being the one that not only everyone knows, but like maybe literally everybody knows.
Yeah. I can't imagine anyone would find this podcast and not know that song. Short of the bajillion people that found us because Spotify linked us to Lorde on Year Ends, which was a nice boost. So thank you to Spotify. I mean, you're evil, but we appreciate the bump in listenership.
Even more so, I think all the people who listened to Lorde and found us that way, of which I'm sure many people listen to Lorde, also know this song. So
yeah. Yeah. And surely stuck around for the rest of that podcast episodes. Jake, we're bringing back two Columbia House Party traditions from the in-person era today. The first is you being late, which bad commute. What's the deal here?
I was working. I was finishing my work.
All right.
I have responsibilities and things to do.
All right. Well, the second in-person tradition is saved for later, and I might not even say it because it runs the risk of our final segment guest just pivoting the segment to roast me back. So I might just leave that one in the holster. We'll see. Jake, today we're talking about one of the most successful pop albums ever and one of the industry's most popular and controversial stars. She also happens to be, according to my mom, my first ever crush, although I believe Alex Mack from The Secret World of Alex Mack technically has her beat. She is one of the highest and fastest selling artists of the last 25 years, with 6 number one records, 5 number one singles, and immense cultural influence. Today, we're going back to where it all started for Britney Spears with Baby One More Time. Here, Jake, say the name of the song in all caps, you dunce, because I always forget. And the first time I remember to do it in several episodes is the one time absolutely nobody needs me to name the title track off Britney Spears' Baby One More Time. Baby One More Time. Jake, if it's not immediately clear 5 minutes in here, we need a guest to help us through this one. And just in general. So to help us contextualize Britney Spears' Baby One More Time, we bring on our favorite regular guest and just generally the coolest, most pleasant person, Sarah McDonald. What's up, Sarah?
Hi. How are you guys?
I'm good. Fine. Jake's married.
I like that we were both just like, we're not going to answer Sarah just because we know whatever we say is going to cause her to make fun of us. So I'm just not going to say it.
I can make fun of you for that. I can make fun of you for the silence. It just
see.
How are you, Sarah?
I'm okay. I'm staring out at darkness at 5 20 in the evening, which is absolutely crushing. So, you know, like, happy to be here, I guess.
Well, better this than just sitting there in the darkness, I guess. marginally better to be doing this with us.
Why are you sitting in the dark?
Well, turn okay, on a light, sorry.
You fool.
I mean, I'm sitting in my office with a light on, but it's just dark on the other side. And it's just a little like, I'm happy to live in a place where I have windows again, which is wonderful. It's been such a lift. But then the downside is that it gets dark earlier and it's 5 o'clock and I'm like, yeah, it's time for bed. This checks out.
Yeah, you did post a very nice sky photo shortly before you came on, though. So at least you got that going.
I will say, as someone who lives in a different building, but apparently a very similar looking apartment, as I messaged Sarah a little while ago, being like, do we live in the same building? And found out that was not the case. I do understand that window layout that you have, which mm-hmm. is very similar to ours, how now that it gets dark at 4:30, how it's just like, oh, it's nighttime and time for bed immediately.
I got actually very excited thinking that Jake lived in the same building as me. Because I think I would be a good neighbor. Because I would be like, I'm so excited that you're here, but I would never bother you because I would never want to be bothered.
That's the perfect neighbor.
Yeah. Plus co-cat people, so you always have someone to feed your cats.
Yeah, and my cat hides. Like, she's so low key. Yes, I would never. I would be like, I wouldn't even look you in the eye if we were in the elevator together. I'm kidding. I would at least acknowledge you.
No, absolutely not. It's like the friends thing where they're just like freely going into each other's houses. That's crazy.
Concerning. And like, I hate Friends so much, but I obviously grew up watching it. But like, that left such an impression on me, being like, who are these people who do not respect boundaries? Like, right? This is insane.
It could be my closest friend in the world living across the hall from me, and I would always at least call first.
I mean, I text my partner in the other room. Like, I can't even be bothered to get up and talk to him in person. So, like,
oh, yeah.
That's the kind of friend I would be in a building with you. So,
our apartment is basically one room with sliding doors some places, and I'll still message Cassie if I need something.
So. Oh, man. I love being
domesticated and washed. Aren't you guys lucky with windows and... windows and partners and cats.
You have so many windows. What are you talking
about? In the
about?
Common area, not in my bedroom, where my office also is.
I guess that's true. You have a window in there, don't you?
What? Yes, but it's an alleyway window, so it gets no light. I can, though, open the window to get that nice smell from the garbage bins that are right outside of it.
Ooh, yeah. Gotta love living in the city.
All right, guys. If you are a long-time listener or even a medium-time listener, you know Sarah by now. Sarah is a freelance music and culture writer and one of our favorites. She's had bylines everywhere. And most recently, she has taken that to a newsletter at cerulean.substack.com, C-E-R-U-L-E-A-N. Make sure to check that out and subscribe. It's wonderful. You can follow her on Twitter at Sarah S. McDonald as well and find her work at sarahsmcdonald.com. We'll also tweet out all those links and everything because Cerulean is hard to spell.
It's kind of funny making the jump to Substack when everybody else is making the jump to Substack. So it's just like you're pushing your own voice down and it's like a nice little personal project. I have such a weird relationship to my work now and, you know, being like, quote unquote, like a public figure writer type of person. So it's just been nice to do this at my own pace and to think about things from why I love them versus I need to have a voice about them, which I think can happen when it comes to culture writing. And I don't want to be that person. I was that person like 4 or 5 years ago. My therapist was actually like, hey, have you considered not thinking about music to enjoy it more? And I was like, ooh, this is why I pay you all the money I do.
As someone who turns every hobby into work, I completely understand and would not listen to your therapist were it me. Hence the existence of this podcast.
I mean, like, I forget forever ago you talked to me about like music writing and I was like, yeah, you should do it. I would be so happy for you to do this. Like, I really want to read your thoughts. And then I think about the work involved and I'm like, oh God, I just like, I don't wish that on anyone. And yet here we are.
Yeah. It's the exact opposite of when Zoobs told me not to go into sports writing.
quick Zoob story. We recently followed each other on Twitter and man, it's been a delight, like a real delight. Just having another friend in and around, the Waterloo region.
Oh boy.
You can just call it the region, Sarah. No, everyone on this podcast knows.
If we're turning this into another region podcast, I am leaving. I already do one of those a week with Zoobs. I don't need
Sarah, Lauren. We talked about Constantine's, Zoobs. There's no end to the region content here.
Well, you know what to do, Jake. Like, when it's time to leave Toronto, that's where you go. So
I'll never leave. I'm here.
That
I'm
might
here
as well be Detroit to Jake.
Oh, buddy. I don't know if you guys know this, but there is a running joke amongst my friends that my Southern Ontario geography is basically non-existent.
Jake, like, it's come up on this podcast multiple times.
You mean you've only been like in and around Toronto?
No, I've been to all the places. I just don't know how to get there or where they are.
The 401, it's just so easy.
Yeah, but what
direction? But it goes in two directions, Sarah.
Right.
I guess.
I don't know what's east and what's west. If it's come up in this podcast before and you've listened to this and heard that, I was going to apologize, but also you should know better by now. And also, whatever. Time is fake.
We're going to take a break and we're going to talk about Baby One More Time after this. Britney's history is very well known, and we have a lot to talk about on the back end of this podcast, so we're going to zoom through it very quickly, if that's okay with the two of you, and even if it's not, because I'm in control here. I got the steering wheel. So, as a lot of people know, Britney Spears was a child star of sorts. She started performing in dance as early as 3 and a song as early as 5. She did the talent show circuit, which is just very sad to think about anyone doing. She tried out for the Mickey Mouse Club revival and was rejected, and then went to a professional performing arts school. The family moved to New York to put her in that program. She was cast in Off-Broadway and then went on Star Search, was in a bunch of commercials, and then finally got cast on the Mickey Mouse Club. Now, check out this draft class. This is like the LeBron, Dwayne Wade, Carmelo Anthony, Chris Bosh, Darko Milicic draft class for the Mickey Mouse Club. Britney Spears, Christina Aguilera, Justin Timberlake, Ryan Gosling, Kerry Russell.
Who's the Darko?
I guess Kerry Russell's the only one of those who hasn't done music stuff, I think.
Yeah, yes. But she was in Star Wars, so like...
She was.
Oh, no, she's great.
But it's the worst Star Wars. But she was in The Americans.
And Felicity, so like...
And Felicity.
Yeah, you asked who's the Darko. I mean, the other four, she's the fifth most successful of those people. Darko had a 10-year NBA career and made like $25 million. It's not, being the Darko isn't that bad. All right, because we need another music clip, here is a clip of childhood Britney Spears singing some covers. I left this one up to Dylan. I'm very excited to see which of the covers I sent Dylan he chooses to include here. So the more important note than Britney Spears being this budding child star through the Mickey Mouse Club was that she was also a starting point guard on her basketball team.
Wow. Her and Avril, secret sports stars.
After the Mickey Mouse Club stuff, Britney Spears was supposed to be in a female pop group called Innocence. Yes, not Innocence, Innocence. That name reminds me of, I'm sure you guys have seen, but maybe not recently, That Thing You Do, where the one guy in the band is obsessed with coming up with like a really bad punny name for the band.
This is why, yes. Like, I hated pop music for such a long time as a teenager. Like, yeah. I can't forgive this of pop music. I really can't.
Just like the names?
Yeah, just like the doubling down on really corny names, the puns, just like thinking that they're being clever, but they're not. It just drives me crazy.
You weren't a Soul Decision fan?
I won't say anything to that. I refuse.
Okay, so Brittany was saved from innocence by a family friend named Larry Rudolph, who instead had her do a demo to pitch the labels. She was turned down by multiple labels who only wanted boy bands and girl bands, until Jeff Fenster of Jive Records was impressed, had her audition, and signed her. So they got her working with producer Eric Foster White, who, Jake, you mentioned Max Martin earlier. Him and Eric Foster White, basically, they weren't the only two writers on this album, but they split the heavy part of the workload. Brittany originally wanted to be like a Sheryl Crow type, but realized that it made more sense to go pop. And as she put it, that would allow her to dance more, which was more in line with her personality. So worked with Eric Foster White, worked with Max Martin, worked with a few other producers to release this album in January of 1999. Now, a very of the time thing is that Baby One More Time, the single, had come out 4 months prior, 3 months prior in October. I'm bad at calendars, apparently. It was massive. So it was one of the biggest singles ever. We played it off the top. You know the song. 10 million in sales as a single worldwide. Platinum everywhere. Number one everywhere. So expectations are obviously very high at that point. So then Sometimes was the second single. And I don't remember Sometimes being a single. Like, I don't really remember that song much at all.
I do. I remember the video. Like, and this is of a video. Like, this is the video age, right? Like, when I think of these songs, the first thing I'm thinking is visually, because they were on the countdown.
Yeah, agreed.
Is this the one with the viewfinder thing?
Yeah, and she, she swerves so innocent in this video, wearing the white or like baby blue and stuff, and looks very much like a young woman versus like, I guess, whatever sort of ageified person she was in Baby One More Time with like the tied up shirt and stuff.
Mm-hmm. You're very right about it being entirely visual, because as someone who had not listened to the rest of this record, like, obviously my Britney Spears knowledge is limited to her singles, but I can tell you what each one from this era is based on what's happening in the music video.
Yeah. And that's, I don't know if we could say the same. Really. Like, the now, like, I'm sure like there are music videos now, but it's not like how ubiquitous is it seeing that on the countdown for like 2-3 months straight?
Right. If you say to me like she's standing on the cliff, that's I'm Not a Girl, Not Yet a Woman, a song I've not listened to in 20 years, but I remember the video.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes. So that was the number two single. And for whatever reason, I have this incredible blank spot for it, apparently. The next single, though, I do not. And I absolutely remember the video because it had Sabrina the Teenage Witch in it and Vinnie Chase, pre-Vinnie Chase. The next single was You Drive Me Crazy.
Great movie.
Yes. Yes. A great movie as well. I guess I want to ask, like, going back to the videos, especially like Sometimes to You Drive Me Crazy, there is like, even though these songs are off the same album, there's like this weird growing up in how Britney is presented. And obviously, like, she was like very sexualized for a teen in the Baby One More Time video. But the Crazy video kind of like dials that up. I don't know. Jake, you have thoughts on this song, don't you?
I don't really have thoughts on any like individual song, but I do remember this song very well, and I remember the video. But to your point that you were saying about like not as many singles as you would have thought, I didn't realize there were two early Britney albums. I didn't realize that Oops, I Did It Again was not this album. I thought they were.
Ah. Yeah, because it came out the year after. Like, they really went back to back with it.
Yeah, like, I thought Lucky and Oops, I Did It Again, and I Guess I'm Not a Girl. Is that the Crossroads one, I think?
No, that's on the next one. It's on a third record.
That's the next? See, yeah. So I have no idea. They're all one album to me, and then she made Toxic, and it was different. That's how I think of Britney.
I think that's kind of fair. I guess at this point, like, we're going to talk about how this album was received in a little bit, but obviously, like, when you go single to single to single like this, the expectations kind of become their own thing. Sarah, I know this is one of your favorite songs on the album, but I guess what I'm trying to get at is, like, were you, you bought this album for the single and then liked everything and then were excited to see the singles roll out? Or how did you kind of consume this over the, like, albums had, like, a 2-year life cycle at this point, which is really weird to think back and remember, like, singles coming out 6 months apart, but that was the case.
Yeah, I mean, like, this was like right in my sort of pop heyday as a child. Like, I was a Backstreet Boys girl for life at that point, and like NSYNC could, like, you know, drop into a hole and I would be so happy about that. Like, it was really like divided in my household, and because like what what
I'm on the other side of that argument.
Fun fact, I've interviewed Justin Timberlake, and it was like one of the best things to be on the other side, being like, you don't impress me, and I'm gonna hold that petty thought for the rest of my life because I'm a Scorpio. But Backstreet Boys,
so what you're Justin Timberlake.
Yeah, I was like, literally, who cares. But I loved, you know, like, I loved Backstreet Boys, and they were always like my kind of entry point into this. But because Baby One More Time was always on TV, was always on every countdown that I watched, and like, I was just mesmerized by that video because I was like, what, 10 years old, and I think my sister had just gone into high school, and I always thought I was older than I actually was. So I really wanted to be like that. I really wanted to be this like feminine child. And I felt like Britney could be my guiding light with that. And then that changed over the next few years. But like, I really loved the record when I bought it, but I bought it off the strength of one single, which is how, you know, I always bought music as a child. Even when I was downloading stuff on LimeWire, like 6-7 years later, it was off the strength of a single. And then maybe I would like the record. I wouldn't spend so much money as I did. I would be getting it for free. But yeah, I mean, it's one of those albums that I think Baby One More Time, the song, is indicative of Britney and a time period, and not so much the album, if that makes sense, because the song is so removed from this record to me. It will always live above it. It will always live in its own kind of space and time.
I think I agree with that, even without having attachment to the record itself, because it was like this stratospheric like thing for me, especially because it's sort of, I'm going to get my timeline wrong also, but like, I feel like that really kicked off the sort of like pop boom of that time.
It did, right? Like, you had Christina Aguilera after that, and, you know, Jessica Simpson and stuff like that. And, you know, like that competitiveness, like, I think, yeah, you had the boy bands, like, but then when you had like the pop solo women, it was a totally different conversation.
Right. And I feel like there's pre Baby One More Time and post Baby One More Time in terms of that. So I think that makes sense, that being sort of a separate thing.
Sarah, I just wanted to dig in on one other thing that you mentioned. You said that kind of like this album or that the timing of this album was kind of connected to your, like, I guess, early feminism. And then you said that shifted. And I just want to dig in more on how that shifted a couple years later and whether the liner notes you have from this album are still in good shape or not.
Okay, so, like I said, I think when I was a kid, I saw this as like, this is, you know, the kind of woman I'm supposed to be, this pristine white kid and who's blonde. And I was going through puberty, and it was not fun. And I didn't look like that. but I started to have different feelings about Baby One More Time, just kind of outside of whatever tragedies and miseries that puberty brought upon me. And then I just like felt really defeated by it, that it was hollow. Like I just remember listening to Baby One More Time. Like I said, Baby One More Time is the only song that after I bought this record, I could listen to. But then when I listened to the rest of it, like Sometimes or Email My Heart or like Soda Pop, which was like such a trip to listen to the other day, like these also feel so of like a specific time. I just got really mad. I got really resentful of the fact that this is what I was supposed to be. And I didn't feel like I could be this person. So I started to black out Britney's eyes and her smile. And I ripped up the liner notes and I destroyed the CD. I cracked it in half and I threw it in the garbage.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's,
didn't leave a lot of subtlety there.
Yeah.
It was like the most, I guess, aggressive rejection of this idea of womanhood, which is what Britney was and which I think led to her downfall, because she became the vessel of everybody's ideas that like even she couldn't even uphold or didn't even want to uphold. And that's what happened to that CD. So no, I don't have it. And the liner notes are not intact. It's been 20 years since I've done that. So, and then I fully moved on to my Michelle Branch phase of life and then onward into punk. Yeah. So,
yeah. What a great shirt that Michelle Branch shirt I have is. I should have worn it today.
You know, that was one of my options. Like, if you ever want me back to talk about Michelle Branch, like the years I spent trying to perfect those glossy lips that she has, like it pains me to think that I'll never achieve that look. It really pains me.
Well, I mean, there's still time.
There is.
To pivot us back just a little bit. So You Drive Me Crazy, I kind of remember it being bigger than it was. Not that a top 10 single isn't big, but it only hit number 10 on the Billboard chart. And I would have swore it was number one. I mean, she performed it on Sabrina the Teenage Witch, which coming, the TGIF lineup right after the Much Countdown on Fridays. Boy, I didn't think a song got bigger than that.
Did you guys watch like Teen Angel on TGIF too? Like if you're going to commit to TGIF, you commit to TGIF.
Yeah.
I feel like my TGIF experiences were pre that. Like I was very much in the Boy Meets World years. And then Sabrina to me is like a Saturday morning show, not a TGIF show. Am I wrong?
No, she was definitely TGIF. Yeah. Like prime time.
Yeah, you're wrong.
Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
Idiot. One of the other songs you mentioned, Sarah, that I want to take us to, because not only is this album full of bangers, it's also quite prophetic, as you wrote in a Vice article in 2016 about the song Email My Heart. Sarah, I won't do that awkward thing of reading your article back to you on the air, but run us through a little bit of how Email My Heart predicted the future.
Yeah, it's pretty clear. I am going to read my own stuff. I hate reading my own stuff, but I also hate more just like, hey, Blake, listen, I also wrote something that has to do with this podcast episode. Like, one day I want you to choose something that I've never written about, but only think about. It would bring me such great joy. But yeah, I just...
Sorry. Put me on blast for trying to bring you on to episodes that I know you're passionate about. Okay, we'll bring you on for an episode haven't cared enough to write about.
What? So. Just bring me... Like, I'm upset you didn't bring me on the Limp Bizkit episode. Like, I could just talk shit about Fred Durst all day. Also, Britney dated Fred Durst. Do we mention this at all? Are we going to talk about this?
What?
That's insane. Didn't know
that. When? You guys didn't know that? That they absolutely boned down?
Okay, I have two questions. One, what's the age difference there? And two, when did this happen?
It was definitely in the early 2000s. I think it was like post...
2003.
Justin, yeah, it was after the breakup.
Is that post K-Fed or pre-K-Fed?
Pre-K-Fed.
Wow, what a...
Who would have thought you can go downhill after Fred Durst?
You know what, though? That's like a good transitional bridge to go from Timberlake and then like Durst to Federline. I see the path there. That makes sense.
Yeah.
I guess I'll circle myself back to my own article.
Sure.
Sorry, you brought up Fred Durst. We can't not talk about it.
I'm gonna call Cullen in right now for his take.
Yeah, no, I wrote this article because it was in 2016. Or sorry, 2019, not 2016, because it was right around the 20th anniversary of the record. And I was like, what's a fun thing that anybody what's a fun angle that no one's gonna think of? And I was like, Email My Heart seems very of the moment, but also super predictive because I basically wrote this article thinking that, you know, when I was a kid, all I could think about was just like writing emails and being in the chat room with other kids, talking to them, other kids, quotation marks, but just like communicating digitally that way. And that felt comfortable and safe. And I think that Email My Heart was really like the catalyst for how we talk to each other today, you know, like sending these long emails to each other, sending long DMs to each other. Like, I can count on my hand the number of people who text me or call me versus sending me messages in Instagram DMs or Twitter DMs and stuff. And it's just a pop song. I realize this. I realize that it doesn't need to be as deep as it is, but I don't know. I think Email My Heart is. It perfectly captures the last 20 years and I think the next 20 years of how we are going to profess our feelings for one another in this weird song that starts with like an Elton John like piano intro. It's so cheesy. Yeah.
No pressure, 16-year-old Brittany. You're just dictating the next 40 years of human communication. Okay, so as much as that seems exaggerative, people did absolutely treat Britney Spears like she had that much power and was that important culturally. Baby One More Time got mixed reviews and was kind of derided a little bit as silly or childish. She got Girl Next Door version of Madonna, but the Top 40 Readiness got it some decent reviews as well as some of the truly awful kind of reviews that I'm sure you can imagine about a teenage pop star at the turn of the century. Now, Britney had a lot of success as well. Obviously, she won Billboard Female Artist, Teen Choice Album. She was nominated for an AMA and a Blockbuster Entertainment Award. She was also nominated for that foreign Juno category that doesn't even make sense since why the Canadian Music Awards have a highest selling foreign album. Anyway, she was nominated for a Juno. She sold 121 copies in her first week, broke a bunch of records along the way, a ton based on age, a ton for overall success, a bunch for having the chart-topping single and album at the same time. And eventually, Baby One More Time became the 14th album of the 90s to sell 10 million copies plus. It was certified diamond. It spent 51 weeks in the top 10. Beaten only by Millennium from the Backstreet Boys. It had 103 weeks on the chart in total, and as of 2003, had sold 25 million copies. In time, it's been given kind of iconic status, credited with helping usher in the revival of teen pop, and Billboard listed it as the number 41 of their top 200 albums of all time. Jake, I'm curious as to your take on when we, you know, obviously with something like this, there's going to be mixed reviews no matter what, and there's going to be mixed retrospectives on it. But I'm curious as to your take on whether Britney would be received differently today, given that, you know, the climate now is maybe a little more like poptimism friendly, to use a very broad term?
I mean, yes and no, I think. And the only reason I say no is because the reason that all that, one of the main reasons that all that stuff is better received now is because of her. So, like, I don't think the love for pop music that exists for our generation as older 30-year-old-ish millennials could exist without the pop foundations that Britney and Christina and NSYNC and et cetera, did back then. So it's one of those, like, I don't know if it's just because we've been rewatching Lost, so it's where my brain is at, but it is one of those, like, things where if we're talking technically, yes, she would be better received now, but she also, but it also wouldn't exist without her. But if we're just talking this hypothetical world where everything goes the same, just Britney comes out now and all music sensibility is exactly the same, I think she would be hugely well received now, because I think now it would be like, oh, it's a throwback to, because it is more like the pop of today, for the most part, is a little less bubblegum, to paint with a reductive term, I think. But also, it's still the same kind of craft, I think. Like, there's obvious links between a Carly Rae or a Dua Lipa and this album. And I also think, even regardless of how it'd be received, it definitely wouldn't be as quickly dismissed as right. It was back then. Like, it was very much, all pop music then was very much from the, like, in giant air quotes, cool kids, like, completely derided and dismissed. Like, there's no, I was reading Pitchfork's 100 Best Songs of the Year today, and, like, no judgment on what's in there or not, but, like, the amount of pop that's in their top 100 would not have been in the top 100 of Pitchfork in 1999. And I just think that she would have, I'm not sure exactly how it would have been received, but I definitely don't think it would have been so derided and dismissed as pap that pop music of that era was by, like, the rock kids or the hip kids or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, not sure I'd use the word pap, but I get what you're saying. Otherwise,
I'm using the, it's an old phrase.
Sure. And for anyone who hasn't seen Lost, what Jake is trying to describe is that contextualizing if Britney came along now gets us into a hot tub time machine situation. that's surely the more culturally relevant way to phrase that than Looper or Lost or anything like that. There was also, as Britney's career rolled on, I think probably a little bit of Britney fatigue. She followed with Oops, I Did It Again in 2000, which sold 20 million, went number one, was certified diamond. She had Britney in 2001, 9 million in sales, four times platinum, number one, and In the Zone in 2003, 6 million in sales, two times platinum, number one, all very successful albums, but you see them kind of going on the downswing. Finally, she takes an actual gap in between albums and releases Blackout in 2007, which is probably the album of hers that I think is the biggest victim of, like, people had preconceptions about Britney and weren't willing to give new stuff from her a chance. I think that album's actually good. I know Sarah does as well. This is Give Me More off of that album.
It's Britney, bitch. Display of affection.
Sarah, you will argue for that album, right? For Blackout?
Yeah, I mean, I argue that, like, more than anything, I want Britney Spears' legacy not to be Baby One More Time. You know, it's Britney, bitch. Like, that's, it's iconic. I was reading, I think it was like Rob Sheffield or something, that this is her most punk album. And I would agree that it's like, it's the one where she really let, you know, herself be in control, as chaotic as that time is for her. I was reading like these, they're just like, it's such a, like, it's such a obviously tragic arc that she has over the past like 20 years, but like reading the massive essay in Rolling Stone of like the tragedy of Britney Spears and all the people who were around her as she's making this record, and like the writer being like told that she can't interview Britney unless there's like $1 million in cash and stuff like that. And just the tension between Britney and the paparazzi and the way that we look at her, like this album obviously wouldn't exist without all of that, which is, I think, the hardest thing to reconcile, as much as I love it. But it is, it's, I think to Jake's point that, you know, if Britney were successful now, it is on the strength of people accepting pop music, because the craft itself, like, it's pretty easy to, it's not pretty easy to write a pop song. It can be, but it's pretty formulaic and people can kind of get on board with that. And I think here, I don't know, I think I get like shades of Billie Eilish from Blackout, you know, like there's a rawness to it over this pop sound, over obviously this immense amount of hurt that she has. And I don't know. I think Blackout is her best one, and it obviously super underappreciated.
Yeah. So naturally, it being the best and most interesting and stuff, it's her first album not to go number one and the worst selling of her first six albums. Sarah has mentioned a couple times now kind of what has happened to Britney since. That's beyond the scope of this episode, both because we're talking about her very first album and because to do that sensitively, we'd need, you know, 30, 40, 50 minutes. So recommend that Rolling Stone profile. Recommend Jezebel essay from November from Emily Alford as well. In 2019, Britney did go on an indefinite work hiatus, canceling one of her Vegas residencies. There's been a lot of unfortunate stuff back and forth with her father, Jamie, and his handling of her and his public comments, and then the, you know, the conservatorship and that being contested in a very public way. So you can find lots of that in the Rolling Stone article, in the Jezebel essay, lots of other places. Britney did have four more albums after that. She was also a fembot in Austin Powers 3, which I only mention because I rewatched the first Austin Powers because it hit Netflix and it actually held up okay. And the third Austin Powers is probably the worst movie I've ever seen.
Right.
We are not going to talk much more about Austin Powers, but
rats,
after this break, we're going to bring on another guest. I think the first ever two guests on the same episode. Yeah, we'll see after this. All right. So here to help us through some of the fashion and cultural influence of this era of Britney is Jake's wife. Hi, Cassie.
Oh, hello. How's it going?
Well, how are you?
Trying to get into the chair because Jake kind of just snapped at me.
I was really extending your intro. I was really dragging your intro out because it sounded like you guys were having trouble.
Well, yeah, because we have like the one mic, so we've never had to do something at the same time before, so it makes it really complicated.
Does it, though? Because what is Jake going to have to contribute to this section?
No, he just walked away. He's not even in the room anymore. He ran away.
All right, then. So, Cassie, at the risk of you turning this around on me, the second Columbia House Party tradition from the in-person episodes that I wanted to bring up, the earlier one was Jake being late. The second one is right. You continued our earlier tradition of someone being too hungover to do their notes. So thank you for that. It feels like a throwback episode.
That was absolutely me. I was pretty hungover, but I did it, and they're better. They're better than ever. So
yeah,
get ready because I have some stuff for you.
Yeah, I don't. I don't want to be a third cook here too much. So basically, what Cassie brought to us, Sarah, is that, or what she wanted to talk about was that the videos, and we touched on this a little bit earlier, is that the videos and the fashion and everything around Britney, ancillary to the music, is very pivotal to getting Britney. Mm-hmm. So Cassie, Sarah, I'm just going to kind of hand it to you guys for now. So Cassie, if you want to lead us through this, it's all you.
Perfect. Thank you. So first of all, I want to do a little bit of a summary about what Y2K aesthetic is, because I think that's really important to understanding who Britney is. So Y2K aesthetic kind of started in 1998 and went to about 2003. And it was really because people were experiencing this anticipation and joy with the rise of technology. So we have cell phones coming out that aren't like the ridiculous Zach Morris phone. And we have the internet, which is like a real thing now. But then we also have the threat of the end of the world. So everybody's kind of gripped in that. So yeah, I mean, we've kind of gone full circle at this point. So the year 2000 was kind of sold to us as this entirely new era, like a time of rich prosperity or possibly the end of the world. So you could go either way. So spend, 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 because you don't have a lot more time. And the culture kind of continued on with that. So it was all shaped by luxury. It was futuristic trends. And like a real push to inform the masses that you need to own this. So when it comes to the actual aesthetic, like frankly, it's a little bit of a mess. It's a lot of rich stuff, but done so that any consumer could get it. So they wanted to make it a lot easier for everybody to buy. And I mean, it's a lot when you look back on it, but in my own opinion, I don't think that there's an era that gave us so much fun as Y2K and like just generally how you got to look.
Yeah, or as many like butt cracks, I think, or thongs for that matter, or hip bones.
Yeah, all so important, or like the mesh shirts that I tried to rock all of the time that I could absolutely not pull off. But we got to have like a lot of fun with fashion. It was a lot of shiny metal, a lot of low rise jeans. It was thongs sticking out, which we absolutely have to credit Degrassi for being the show to really bring that to the forefront of culture, I want to say. So thank you to Degrassi for giving us Britney's ass.
Cassie, I'm just going to jump in here and we're going to talk about Britney's ass and everyone's ass a little bit more. I asked you before you came on what you think the song on the album that kind of best goes with what we're talking about here. And I'm going to play it for everyone now. Just as you've set the scene so well for Y2K, just going to play The Beat Goes On so everyone gets in the proper mood. The cover of the Sonny and Cher song with help from All Seeing, a Brit electronic group. This is The Beat Goes On. Okay, Cassie. So where does Britney fit into all of this? Because she's not exactly, you know, when you came on our No Dare episode to talk about Gwen Stefani, you used the term, I think, style icon or fashion icon, and you don't feel that way about Britney, really.
So it's kind of difficult because she is and she isn't. She's a style icon because we made her one, but she's not stylish.
I mean, the denim dress.
If that makes sense.
Afraid, like, that's like...
Oh, yeah, and... I have a background for you that you're gonna just eat up. It's fantastic. But I would say that she's the real embodiment of this whole aesthetic because she made the look something accessible. We could run out as 13-year-olds and buy everything she was wearing at Zellers or Claire's. Like, this wasn't a difficult look to pull off. It might have been a bit inappropriate looking back, but it was absolutely something that, like, I myself as a 13, 14-year-old girl could go and do. It was really easy. And we get the midriff tops, we get the accessibility of who she was as a person, and she was who I personally really wanted to be. She was that sweet girl next door with like a little bit of country with her personality, but then this air of high fashion in what she wore with these bright colors and these vibrant flowing things and always an exposed midriff. So it should come as no surprise, and I don't want to shock anybody, but she did not dress herself in these years. She obviously had a very large team to prepare her image and get us all out to the store to buy the replicas. And they really set the scene for this innocent versus sexy. Like, they wanted to embody the virginal, the very sweet, but also someone that was really, really hot. And I think that both men on this podcast can attest to that. No.
No, not at all.
Where's Jake?
No,
not even a little bit.
Where's Jake? Is he still in the other room?
Yeah, he's hiding. He's looking at pictures of Britney.
Look, it's obviously it worked and it served its purpose. What I'm more upset with is that I didn't live in at this time I was a preteen. Like, I just wore whatever my parents bought me. I wasn't into buying my own clothes yet. I feel like me missing the era where the Newfie tuxedo, like the full denim outfit, was cool is just like a missed opportunity. Like,
it really is.
That is the garment of my people. and Justin Timberlake brought that to the masses, and I didn't get to be a part of that. And I don't think I have the influence to bring it back, you know?
Well, and that's what's so interesting, because now I look back on those infamous photos. So for any reference points that you guys are looking for out there, this is the 2001 American Music Awards red carpet look of Justin Timberlake and Britney Spears wearing the complete jean outfits. And you're crazy if you don't know what that is, because it's the most iconic look, perhaps, of the decade?
Yeah.
His hat is denim. Yeah.
It's
got to be the only denim hat, right?
Still so
and
shocking.
I mean, like, it's been reinvented by several people. We have a Victoria's Secret model, supermodel, Devin Windsor, who did it with her boyfriend, and probably more memorably, Katy Perry and Riff Raff in 2014 replicated the look on the red carpet. So it was MTV Awards, I believe. So let's talk about those looks a little bit, because that's why we're really here, honestly. So there's a lot of speculation that went around with these jean looks because, like, who did it? Why did you do it? And, like, how come? A lot of upset, I would say, and confusion. So about 2 years into their 2-year reign as the pop prince and princess, Britney and then boyfriend Justin Timberlake approached Justin's stylist with NSYNC, and his name is Steven Gerstein. So Steven had been working with NSYNC for quite a while, and he was he started kind of in costume design, which is why all of their looks were so interesting, for lack of a better word. So Britney had basically had this dream of an all denim look for the red carpet, and Gerstein had made himself known that he could kind of make things happen. Like, when the boys would be on tour, they would be like, oh, I like this leather jacket. Like, can you get me that and then build a look around that? So he was very approachable when it came to creating looks that you wanted to do. So basically what he did for Justin's suit, the suit that Blake wants to reinvent. they took the suit that he wore for the Celebrity album cover and just remade it in denim. He basically sent his people out to buy 50 pairs of vintage Levi's. And then they were stitched together by a woman named Linda Stokes. And she was this like little old lady who worked 24 hours a day. And if it weren't for her, a lot of LA wouldn't have gotten dressed, it seems. She did all of the stitch work for everybody's red carpet looks. For Britney, her dress was a little bit more interesting, I think, because she was then working with Kurt and Bart. And so they're costume designers who had their beginnings in the 1980s in the club scene with people like Warhol and then later on Bowie. And they more recently designed the looks for The Hunger Games, which is pretty cool because those looks are pretty crazy. So they put all of this together, and basically what it is, the suit itself featured like a light wash denim blazer with a jean back pocket in place of a standard chest pocket, with matching multi-tone jeans and a studded waistband topped off with that beautiful jean cowboy hat. Britney was matching in a strapless denim dress with a similar patchwork throughout, and then finished, of course, with a small denim purse. So a lot of people wondered kind of what happened to these looks and like where the outfits went, because usually when you do a red carpet, you'll either send it back to the designer or it'll be gifted to you. So after a little bit of research, it looks like Britney's dress sold at the Nate D. Sanders auctions for $7,199.
That seems low. That seems low for an iconic dress.
Okay, thank you for saying that, because it's a hilarious dress, but it's also not. I think I would wear it.
I think like, and yeah, I would wear it somewhere, or just like wear it to wear it, because you're like, this is so ridiculous. That $7,000 is so
outrageous.
Low. That's so low. That's offensive. Yeah.
And for Britney memorabilia.
But you could buy 50 pairs of vintage Levi's for way cheaper than that, couldn't you?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Like, Gerstein kind of gave away his secret there. So maybe we're just going out to buy a bunch of jeans. If you want to recreate either of these looks, Blake, that's what you have to do.
Please do.
I don't think I would do the hat, but
I have to do the hat. And like the tinted sunglasses.
You can't do some of the outfits.
I just don't like functionally know how to do it.
Wear a hat?
No, make a hat.
How to wear a hat.
I thought we were talking about doing this ourselves.
I mean, it could be your
if you need help sewing, I'm happy to help.
Like your lockdown the sequel project. Like you can do this into 2021. Like I'm gonna knit, you're gonna make a denim outfit, a denim tuxedo. Like you can do it.
It's a good plan for 2021.
Yeah. And then I'm going to wear it to officiate your wedding, Cassie.
I didn't want to say that, but yeah, obviously.
Okay, before we pivot out here and get back to the album just a little bit, Cassie, is there anything more on the fashion side we've got to touch on? Or maybe just Justin and Britney?
Yeah, just, I mean, we're never going to get over it, really. But no, I think the most important thing predominantly about these jean looks is that it embodies Britney to her core, because we have that kind of crazy country fashion of what she had much later on and kind of what she does now. But it's still so glamorous. Like it's the perfect mix of who she is. And I think that kind of transcends time.
That was perfect. That was genuinely wonderful. I was like sitting here just completely mesmerized by this. Thank you.
It was really fun to research.
Yeah, that was great. So we need to, I guess, quickly, I mean, we kind of punted on the song ranking or album ranking segment to do this fashion segment. But quickly, Sarah, do you want to give us maybe your top three favorite songs off of Baby One More Time? And then Cassie, get ready, because the question's coming to you next.
So it's definitely going to be Baby One More Time is number one. And then You Drive Me Crazy. And then I'm going to go with Sometimes, because in my heart, I know that that's the kind of person I am. Like when she's singing, sometimes I run, sometimes I hide. I'm like, oh yeah, no, that's relatable. And then she's like, but like, sometimes I'm scared, but I just love you. And I'm like, oh, that's deeply relatable as a Scorpio. So I'm going to go with the very wispy song that somehow you forgot was on Much Music, Blake. That's unforgivable.
Yeah, I don't know. I had a weird blank spot. I don't know. Sorry. Cassie, do you have a favorite couple songs off this album?
Oh, you bet I do. So I'm going to switch it up a little bit. I'm going to say my number one is You Drive Me Crazy. There's something about the song that's so catchy. Like, I can't help but get pumped. Then I'm going to go Baby One More Time. But then for my third one, in a similar way but a different song, I'm picking From the Bottom of My Broken Heart.
Yeah, that's another Scorpio song.
Because it's just, there's so much feeling in it.
Just a lot of so much emotion. Feeling. Just the whole record. You're oh, just yeah. like, it's oozing out.
Angsty. But in a pretty way.
Jake, do you have anything to contribute to the top songs discussion here?
Sorry, we have the one mic that we had to scramble to get to. What was that?
Yes, Baby One More Time and You Drive Me Crazy are on all three of our top threes. And then the third one has been different. My third one, by the way, would be Email My Heart. That song is so cheesy and it's wonderful.
What was Jake's third one?
Sometimes.
Yeah, I think my three would be the singles purely because I have the most familiarity with them. But mm-hmm. in an order, I think I would probably go Baby One More Time first, Sometimes second, and You Drive Me Crazy third.
I'm really surprised you didn't have the Vinnie Chase one number one.
Well, if we're going by the video, obviously Vinnie Chase wins. But
so, Sarah, this is where we get into a bit of a complicated wrinkle. You obviously know that we pick one of the songs from the mixtape, and we all have Baby One More Time at or near the top of our lists. But you kind of made the point earlier that it exists separate of the rest of the album a little bit for you. So I'm curious if you think that makes Baby One More Time the obvious pick for the mixtape, or if that means we should go in a different direction with the 100% mixtape.
100% a different direction. And I know which song you guys should pick.
What song?
You Drive Me Crazy.
All right.
Okay.
No arguments. I'm not going to argue with the guest.
I mean, you could, and you do.
Especially not Sarah. She'll make you pay for it.
I will.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's on the mixtape then. Also want to thank producer Dylan, who is probably going to have to cut like 15, 20 minutes from this episode. Sorry, Dil, but it's, just make sure you cut me and Jake talking and not Sarah and Cassie, because they were obviously the highlights. And thank you to you, Sarah. We always love having you on, to the point that I feel like I've probably asked you on too many times now and you're going to start saying no. But we really appreciate it. And it's always a lot of fun when you come on, even though Jake is a little terrified of the roastings that are coming.
I mean, honestly, I can't wait to hug the shit out of the both of you when I can see you in person. So like, that's what's keeping me going here. You're both amazing.
Aw, that's so nice.
Sorry to be genuine on Maine.
No, it's a helpful end here. And you can follow all of Sarah's stuff on social at Sarah S. McDonald or sarahsmcdonald.com, and subscribe to her newsletter, cerulean.substack.com. We'd also like to thank Jake's wife, or better, I hate saying it like that. I know I'm trying to make the Sportsfelder wife guys jokes, but I don't like the possessive phrasing of it. Anyway, thank you to Cassie, who you can follow at Cass
Lee. She's mine.
Yeah. Cassie, if you are still near the mic or the headphones, thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate it.
Blake, thank you. Welcome, she said you're welcome.
Okay.
Try the fish.
It's Britney, bitch.